Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So on this auspicious Asalapuja night, full moon night, very beautiful moon is up. And yeah, it was just kind of doing the circumambulation around the sala, you know, recollecting, you know, the teaching of the Buddha, the occasion, you know, that on this day, on this night, that, and not just us, but, you know, in all the traditional Buddhist countries, all the monks and nuns, lay people coming to the monastery, doing the same thing that we're doing. And this, just kind of just by repeating, doing certain ceremonies, certain rites and rituals, it's actually binds us, brings us together, connects us, not just with the Buddhists all over the world, but all the Buddhist practitioners, monks and nuns, all throughout the ages, all the time, all the way back to the Buddha. Now that's kind of a theme that I say over and over again, that we're just part of, you know, this wonderful infrastructure that creates wonderful karma throughout the ages. You know, for something so much bigger than we are, and so much purer. And it's it's just kind of a calming idea, calming thought, just to belong to something that's so wholesome, to be part of something. So a lot of time it's just not us striving to purify ourselves, we're just, you know, we are part of the group, part of, you know, wholesome energy, creating, you know, great karma into the future. And today the Salapuja is the Dhamma Day, the day, the first day in history that the Buddha taught his wonderful Dhamma. And so it's reflecting on, obviously, you know, in the sutta, the Buddha is not the one who, like other religion, he didn't make up the Dhamma. It's not something he invented, it's not something he thought about, but it's something he discovered. Yeah, so it's just like truth. Truth has its power. Truth has its own kind of energy. And once the Buddha set forth this motion of the Dhamma, it's not something that can be stopped by anybody or anything in the world. So it just rolls on and on and on, creating, you know, lots and lots of happiness, creating wholesome states. And with anything, you know, the Dhamma is something, is truth, it's something you have to discover, which means it's something that you have to rouse energy, something you have to focus, something you have to be interested in. Normally, wholesome state doesn't arise by themselves. Like having a garden. Flowers don't come up by themselves. Right? You have to tend the field, fertilize it, prepare it, plant the seed, water it, and keep the insects away. Make sure you have plenty of sun. It's the same with our own mind. We leave it to its on its own without paying attention, without rousing wholesome states, without steering away from unwholesome states. Then, you know, the only thing we get for free, the only thing we want without any putting any effort is confusion, distractions, jealousy, irritation, anger, confusion, greed. All those come for free. But we want wholesome states of mind. It's something we have to rouse energy to. So it's something we have to focus on. Yeah. So I was trying to encourage people to not just to kind of drift through life kind of half-heartedly, aimless, but to rouse this energy of not the energy of restlessness, energy of doing, energy from a sense of self or an ego, but the energy of knowing. Yeah, energy of mindfulness, of being aware. where am I and where I should be heading towards? What should I be doing? Whatever it is that we do, is it bringing us happiness? Is it going in the right direction? Or is it bringing in the opposite direction? Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, just kind of a reminder on a daily basis, moment by moment, where the mind is at. And not to allow, you know, old habits to take over. Allow the mind towards veers towards fault-finding. Allow the mind veer towards greed or wanting, longing for things. Allow the mind to veer towards jealousies and anger. But just watching, keeping a watch on the mind. It's like a mother with her kid. It's a great stimuli I go over and over again. You know, with the mother, you know, she's doing her thing, but she's always keeping an eye on the two-year-old. Make sure he's not getting up and anything, not endanger herself, not hurting it. As long as it's, you know, inside safe area, she does her stuff. But it seems like she's like, you know, focused on that. She has one eye on it. Whatever she does, she keeps an eye on it. It's the same with the mind. When we train the mind, it's a little child. There's no point getting used to it, getting mad at it, yelling at it. But just keeping watch on it, whatever it's doing. It is going towards wholesome. Yeah, so it's kind of a mindful watch, not being too anxious, not being too worried, but just kind of careful, interested. One always just kind of engage, wanting to look curious, like a scientist studying things. Yeah, always kind of, like Lumpa Lim said, watching, balancing, adjusting. It's a constant process of adjusting your behavior, adjusting your way of doing things. See, if it brings, you know, whatever we do, is it bringing the wholesome states of mind? Is wholesome states of mind increasing? Are we maintaining it? Or unwholesome states of mind is increasing? So it's always a bit of reflection, asking questions, and modifying as we go along. Doesn't have to be anything very complicated, but it does require constant attention. Yeah, it's just like the little two-year-old kid. It's always up to something, always running around. So the mind, you gotta be, you know, be sharp. Relax. Take your eyes off it. Pretty soon you realize, oh, I'm in this funny space. How do I get here? So reflect on the Dhamma is something, yes, each and every one of us. Dhamma is not, as we commonly think, in these big books, or it's in this crates, a big shipment that we get every year. Yes, the Dhamma's finally arrived, but what Buddha Dhamma? Dhamma books. That's not what the Dhamma is. Those big books, while it's interesting, and it can lead to kind of reflection, the real Dhamma is something that's in our heart. That's why the Dhamma is the highest gift. And the Dhamma doesn't come nicely packaged in boxes. That's not what the Dhamma is. The Dhamma is something that each and every one of us realize in our heart. Something. But it's something that is powerful. Something once you taste it, once you get close to it, you have a feel for it, you understand where it is. And you have a lot of confidence in the path of practice. Yeah, once you taste peace, once you have clarity, it's something that stays with you. Even if you do other things, even if you move away from the training, move to a different religion, something that always stays with you, really, through the rest of your lives, through many, many lifetimes. You get into deep meditation, something you remember, for sure. And that's something that's what holds monks and nuns in the robes. It's the beauty, the clarity, the wholesome energy. Feeling of a contentment, a sense of well-being that you don't find anywhere else. And so it's beyond this world. What you see in this world is here. A lot of restlessness, a lot of confusion. But once you move towards peace, stillness, emptiness, it leaves this, you know, a mark on you. It leaves a mark in your mind, something you always remember, something you always go back to. It's something that the world can't enchant you anymore. The world doesn't hold you anymore. And that's the power of the Dhamma. It holds. It's like ties you to it. And that's why sometimes, like I said, you know, there's a lot of, in the early years when he first came to the monastery, there was a lot of kind of suggestions, pressure to go to Sydney and drum up business support for the monastery. Get the word out there so people know we're here. And luckily I had good advices from meditation teachers in Thailand. Says, no, you just keep practice. And then the Dhamma has its own power. It will bring people in naturally by word of mouth. And that's what happened over the last 8 years. Was, you know, this place has a lot of peace in it, a lot of stillness, a lot of wholesome energy. And it does bring people in. People benefit much more when they come here and practice than when I go to the Sydney and give them a talk and then move back, go back home, watch the TV, go on with their lives. But when people come to the monastery, experience the bush, experience, you know, a few days of just silence, a few days free from the internet, you know, something happens. Yeah, whatever it is that, you know, a bit of worry, anxiety, starts to melt away naturally. People come into the monastery, you see after a few weeks, you know, they start to brighten up. And you can really see that in their appearance. And there's a strong connection between the body and the mind. When the mind starts to clear up, you can see the radiance that starts to appear. You know, and the people that start, you know, to come to the monastery, stay in practice. And it's interesting though, that the Buddha, you know, after he became enlightened, he didn't want to teach. Because he said the Dhamma is so subtle, that most people are caught in the world, caught with longing, caught with craving, caught in the worldliness of ways, wouldn't understand the Dhamma. It would be a lot of problem for him if he teach. And in a sense, you can see, yeah, the world, the way of the world and the way of Dhamma is the exact opposite. World is always having more, being somebody. Always going towards more complication and complexity. Whereas the way of the Dhamma is always going towards simplicity, emptiness, nothingness. And sometimes people think it's boring. You know, we always think, oh, you're really lonely, Ajahn. When you go home, are you lonely? No. Do it, friend. When you go home, it feels great. I really like it when it's about 3 o'clock on Sunday. When everybody's gone home. It's like, yes. Sometimes I go have evening drinks in front of the veranda. It's like, oh, so nice here when no one's around. Have a nice, quiet time. Having a drink. So yes, we appreciate people coming to the monastery to feed us. But it's also very nice when the monastery is empty. The movement of the talking. And that's why it's pointing towards, you know, where peace is. Where clarity. Where emptiness is. So there's always this emphasis on, you know, less is more. Anything that kind of encourages that. And hopefully as we head towards the range retreat, as we head towards, you know, kind of a more formal meditation practice, and there's a lot of encouragement just to go inward. Just to see what is it that's inside each and every one of us. Different emotional dramas, feelings, experiences. What is this that's lodged deep inside? What is it I take to be a self? What experiences, what feelings, what things I identify with? And what things come out when we don't go outward, when we keep all the energy inside? Look inside, look inward. Just to discover, you know, this body and mind of ours, to really understand us better. And we carry this body around for 30, 40, 50 years. We have this mind that we think is ours, thinks it's us, that we identify with 30, 40, 50 years, or 20 years. And what is it? Is it really us? So next, 3 months, it's a good opportunity just to be with that more and more. Be with the voices in our head, be with this body that we have. And really to understand it, not to have a fixed idea what it is, but really to discover, to get to know it, to connect with it, and to be, not through any kind of ideals, but really just to be with the body and the mind, each moment. And see what that's like. Am I the holy person that I want to be, that I hope to come to become? I'm the greedy person, the irritated one, the angry one. Are we any of those? Or are we something more than that? Or less than that? So it's a great, and then I find, and that's why this monastic experience is a great experiment, really, to look inward, which is something that's very rare in the world. And the world always encourages to look outwards, to express ourselves, to do things, to be somebody, to achieve something. But in the monastery, we expect us to kind of have more time to be inward. Not just to be with things. But it does take energy. It does take effort. It does take the ability to engage and to be present and to rouse up that interest, that constant interest, day in, day out. Just to be where we are. And that's the thing, the practice doesn't also work on its own. It's something that we have to constantly find skillful ways, find ways to engage ourselves, find ways to be interested in the training. Because some of you can see the monks who've been a monk for 5 or 10 years, they start to go on cruise control as well. One day passes to another. I always meditate tomorrow. It's always tomorrow to meditate. Today I can do something else. And you find out, and that time slips away. So now that we have this 3 months period, not too many people in the monastery, really just take this opportunity and to really investigate this body and mind of ours. The first 2 weeks, putting the books down, putting the socializing down, spending time by ourselves, and see what comes up. See, that's, what are things that we've been putting away, what things we've been ignoring. And this ability, hopefully this space, this energy, just to be, allow things to come up and to see what it is that we're carrying inside of us, what it is that we're carrying in the mind. So Dhamma is always something that leading inwards, but also onwards. Something that transcends. Truth has the power to liberate, to free us. If we have the courage to look at it, we have the courage to understand, to work with it. So I'm not saying that rains would be a cakewalk, which I was hoping, a very old expression, but I'm an old man. But it's not. But it'll be, what was the new expression? Rains is not always pleasant, but I think tremendously useful in terms of ability, the time, the space to look inwards and to try to get a better feel for this body and mind of ours. Where we come from, where we're going, what's the meaning of life? Is there a meaning to life? Big questions that a lot of times people don't have the time to contemplate. People don't have the courage or the encouragement to reflect on and to be with. And each range is always kind of very different from the next, from the different ones. Although a lot of you are just your first range, but this is my almost 20th range. And this is my 10th range here at Wat Buddha Dhamma. Time does fly very quickly. 10 rains already in the first game, yeah? And yeah, it's been an interesting journey, to say the least. Lots of people come and go. But then at the end, it's always the same. Things come, things go, meet friends, and they move on. But that's okay. It's just the nature of life. And you find that, yeah, even when you're standing still, so much more interesting. The world that comes around you. It's an energy of the mind becomes more clear and more brighter. As you look inward, you understand more about the world, which is a strange thing, because it's like, well, you don't go anywhere. But the more you understand yourself, the more you understand others. That's the beauty of clarity. Beauty of wisdom. So as we head towards this range retreat, which we've been preparing since February, since forever, Ani's arrived on our doorstep. Ani's here. Opportunity just to be with things. I like to encourage people just to rouse the energy, rouse the effort. Not to do anything particular. Hopefully you don't have to, just a grand span. You're not going to be a sotapanna. We had a monk who wanted to be a sotapanna last rains. That did not turn out well. A lot of suffering for everybody, including himself. So hopefully you are going to make your determinations, determined to be here, to be present, to be still, to be kind or gentle, and to have the courage just to look inwards and to discover what is it that we've been carrying around. Just to be with whatever it is, the body and mind process that's unfolding. And as always, to learn from it, to grow in peace and wisdom, stillness. Even if, like I said, usually during the rains, not this monastery, but other monastery, somebody goes crazy. It could be any one of us. Who should that be? It's not real rain retreat, Bodhinyan, like it's not a real rain retreat unless someone goes funny. Unless we call them the paramedics. That hasn't happened here, fortunately. It's not to arouse anxiety or worries. No, but it does have that intensity at times. And when anything, use your common sense, use your wisdom, understanding. And the main thing is, yeah, just to see the whole process of, you know, coming and going. And there is a fair amount of purification. So when the things do get funny, interesting, this is where your harmlessness, your sila comes. Knowing that you have purity of intention, not hurting others, not hurting yourself. So when things go funny, there's always that to rely on. The purity of heart. The harmlessness that we've been practicing for all these years or months. After a while, you know, it is that intention that allows you the courage just to be with things, to be with the really unpleasant mental state. To be with all the demons that we carry around with us. That while we have the aspiration to be pure, to be kind, to be gentle, there is the darker side in each and every one of us. The side that's a bit annoyed, the side that's just fault-finding, the side that can be vengeful, can be violent even. And that's fine. Yeah, the more we hide, suppress it, the more it has power over us. But the more we have faith, courage, just allow these things to be. Just see the petty side of us, the silly side, the jealous side. The side that we don't want to see. But it's there, and it's fine. And that's what purification is about, allowing these things to come up allowing this energy to be there and allow the energy to fade away. Not identifying with it, not making a problem out of it. Not criticizing ourselves, beating ourselves over the head because we realize that we're not as enlightened as we like to be. But enlightenment is not something that is kind of in the books. It's kind of the purification day-to-day work that we every one of us has to kind of go through. Ability, spaciousness in the mind, just to be. With especially unpleasant mental state. Where everybody wants the, of course, the bliss and the joy. We all aim for that one. That's great. Meditation is wonderful. It's beautiful. Nimitta. But no one talks about when the devil comes and visits them. When you get really afraid and fearful. When you get really paranoid. When you get confused. But it's all good. It's all there. And everything belongs. Yeah, to understand that everything belongs, has its place. You can learn from the negative experience as much as the bliss in the mind. Understanding that, we have courage and faith to allow these things to be. And they pass away all by themselves. To do anything about it, you don't have to hide from it, move away, or suppress it. So on this beautiful full moon, cool night, on the cusp of the rains retreat, offer you some word of encouragement just to rouse the energy, rouse the effort, to engage, to be present, to be open, to accept, and to love all that comes into your existence. Be good, bad, or ugly. And through that, there's purification, understanding, and peace. So I offer that for your reflection tonight.
Antamayang tamakatha sadhu karang tathamase sadhu, 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 anumotam.